Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking neck pain to begin the show today, going over what you can do to treat and prevent it. And I have a couple of guests for you. Back as normal, Lori Tyne Brody, a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to see you again.
Awesome. Be here. What a gorgeous day.
It is indeed. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, great to have you with us as well, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, both with us and with me in the studio, which is great, Jill.
It's great to be here. Excited to be here.
So as we talk with Lori and Jill, I hope you'll join in with your questions. Have you lost weight and noticed changes in neck pain or lack of? Have you made adjustments in the amount of time you spend exercising in order to combat neck pain, perhaps, or back pain? And, of course, what general physical therapy questions do you have? I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, email address ideas@WPR.org. Well, Jill Nadeau tells me that I give her a
pain in the neck.
This is not the same kind of neck pain that we're talking about, Lori.
No, it is not. It is not. So what we're talking about today is nonspecific neck pain, and that means neck pain for reasons somewhat unknown. So it's not known that you have arthritis or a disc herniation or some underlying pathology, but at some point, most people over the course of their lifetimes will have some neck pain. And in fact, my sister's sitting to my right because I can't really turn my head to the left right now. And that's probably some sort of non-specific neck pain that I am currently having. So a recent study looked at, it was a systematic review, so they went through all the literature looking at leisure time physical activity and body weight relative to non-specific neck pain. And we need to distinguish different kinds of activity because we all know there are different kinds. So there's occupational activity, and depending upon what you do, you may have some kind of loads on your neck because you sit at a computer all day and you don't move. Or you may have different loads because you are a worker who has to look at a ceiling to do wiring or painting or other types of construction, or you have to get in odd positions because you're crawling around underneath a cabinet. So those are sorts of occupational activity. There's transportation activity, which is, you know, walking or biking to work. Household activities, which you can imagine, you know, cooking, cleaning, carrying children in and out of a car, you know, carrying your trash out, doing yard work. And then there's leisure activity, which is what you do for fun and recreation. So clarifying, this research looked at leisure time activity. There's been other research that looked at the relationship between neck pain and work. So basically, they found weak associations between your body weight with lower body weight, lower BMI, having less nonspecific neck pain, and people with higher levels of activity having less nonspecific neck pain. And that is both the onset and the continued persistence of neck pain. So, you know, increasing your activity level in leisure time, which is not the same as increasing your activity in household activities or work. Work tends to be very repetitive, which is a whole different ball of wax, and actually probably has the opposite effects. Like, as you increase your activity in work or occupation, you probably have more neck pain.
So it doesn't matter, or does it matter in terms of the sort of the leisure time activity? It doesn't matter what you do. If you do more of it, you're...
No, it doesn't really matter what you do. And depending upon how deep you want to go, there is a relationship between leisure time activity and other markers of general health, such as some of the fundamental DNA in your connective tissue, which can be is correlated with the amount of leisure time activity you spend, not work-related activity or household-related activity, but leisure time activity. So there's something about the activity being something you choose to do, something that's fun, something that's relaxing, that is different from any other kind of activity.
It probably has to do with focus, the cognition that goes behind it, and like you said, enjoyment. And so finding a leisure activity that you like to do with people that you enjoy is really important. And to your point, Larry, I think mixing it up and a variety is really good. So, for example, if you're going out and doing some leisure time activity and you're doing some hiking, it's probably important from a neck perspective that you're maybe the person in front for a little bit. Maybe Lori will be on my right for a little bit. Maybe she'll be on my left for a little bit. Maybe she'll be behind me for a little bit, just because that will use all your muscles differently. So I think what probably happens with this leisure time activity and the decrease in neck pain is we indirectly use our cervical muscles to help stabilize our neck. We start breathing heavier, and we use those muscles just in a general way, which is probably enough to decrease the amount of nonspecific neck pain in those individuals.
The other thing that happens with that kind of activity is you get an increase in your overall, what we would call peripheral perfusion, and that is you get increased blood flow to all these working muscles, and that helps maintain their health. So if you are, for example, sitting at a computer, you may actually be increasing the tension in the muscles around your neck, decreasing the blood flow, whereas that relaxation and that general increase in heart rate will actually increase the perfusion in that area to help with providing those tissues with appropriate oxygenation.
Well, I like to walk and jog a little bit, and I had Lila. I was babysitting a very large dog, Lila, over the weekend. And so we did, actually for the last several days. So we've been out and doing which I enjoy, but then I was pulling along like a 70-pound dog or something.
Wait a minute. You were pulling the dog or dog
no,
was pulling
dog
you?
No, the dog was pulling me, yes. Especially when we got near one of the blocks where there's the ice cream store.
Oh, Lila's trained.
Yes. Lila runs quickly there, wants to go quickly there because she knows she's going to get a treat.
Right. So it is amazing having the dog and walking a dog. Lori has a dog. I have a dog. And the amount of socialization and enjoyment that comes with that.
It is amazing how many more people I talk to.
Yes.
Other than just to say hi.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or good morning, or
and the kids that'll come up. I have a smaller dog, and so the little kids in our neighborhood that'll come up and can I pet your dog? And just that interaction and to see the joy that it brings them, it makes me happier while I do my walk.
And quicks up your oxytocin.
Yes, right, exactly. Well, the other thing about walking a dog versus just walking is if you're just walking, you're probably looking fairly straight ahead. Maybe you get to an intersection and you're looking left and right. But if you have a dog, you are turning your head a lot of different ways, watching that dog and watching what they're doing. And if you're like my dog, it's a small dog who can't see. So like when he senses or smells anything, he starts barking. So I have to be very vigilant about watching where there are other dogs. So I have a lot of head activity with that.
So dog walking is pretty good.
Yes, it is.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great activity.
You do have to watch the pulling, though, a 70-pound dog pulling on that, because that's going to pull on your neck and upper back muscles. So you do have to be careful about that.
Yep.
Well, here's another one. Mayo Clinic says poor posture can be another reason for neck pain.
Oh, yes. The bowling ball on the stick analogy is one we use quite a bit when you talk about how heavy your head is, and there's no correlation with how smart you are and how heavy your head is. Let's just get that out there right now. But the average head weighs between 8 to 10 pounds. And as you can imagine, if you have a bowling ball and it's balancing on a stick, if the bowling ball is right in the middle, you don't need much activity from those muscles. But the farther forward your head goes, it exponentially increases the amount of muscle activity you need in your cervical spine muscles to support that.
Oh, yeah. And we see that all the time with so much time spent staring at a screen now.
Right.
You know, as I walk through our clinic and I see people waiting for appointments and I see their posture, I just want to stop and straighten everybody up. And you're right. It's not really related to the size of your head. Although I have one kid who has a very long neck. Mm-hmm. So he's got a long lever arm mm-hmm. for that head. And he's the one who tends to have more neck symptoms than anybody else. So, you know, the length of your neck, again, it's a simple lever arm kind of issue.
And there is evidence that shows that because females have a tendency to have a little bit longer neck. And there is a higher incidence of neck pain in women. And that's one of the things that they have hypothesized is that the longer lever, like a giraffe, more so can be problematic.
So if I, when do I say to myself, I never have, by the way, I don't have neck pains, which is, I'm lucky.
Very lucky.
But if I did, what would the signs be that I need to go see you or somebody else?
Well, if you have limited range of motion, for example, you can't turn your head. If you're getting symptoms into your shoulder or down your arm, absolutely, that would be a sign of radicular pain, potentially a disc herniation. If you're having symptoms that are interfering with your ability to do your work or your leisure activities. And often when we see these people early on, and in fact, we just had a meeting last week and one of my colleagues presented a case of someone who had acute onset of neck pain, no known reason, and for some reason got in on a cancellation because we usually have long waits there. And she was able to get him in for 6 visits over the course of 3 weeks, and he was back out the door. So if you can get in early when these symptoms first arise, it becomes much easier to treat. This, like many of our other problems we see, the longer it takes to get in to see somebody, the more secondary kinds of changes you see because you change how you move, you change how you sit, and then you see secondary problems arise. And then it gets hard to sort out what's first and what's second, what's causing what, and they overlap.
Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody, our guest today. We started on neck pain, but we can take other physical therapy questions as well, of course, as they always do every time they visit us. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us, email address ideas@WPR.org. Clara Neipert's our producer today, by the way. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Again, the number 800-642-1234, email to ideas@WPR.org. Sarah emailed us with an update. In June, she emailed us about an injury to the back of her knee. The doctor had told her it was a strain, but the excruciating pain persisted. Following your recommendations on air, Sarah visited the doctor again, and they scheduled an MRI. And as you had, Lori and Jill had suspected, the MRI revealed a completely torn ACL. Sarah's wondering if that is something that can be healed with physical therapy, or does she have to do the surgery they recommend? Ooh. What about that?
Wow,
Jill?
Great question.
Can you remind me how long this program is? That's an excellent question, Sarah. And there's so many considerations that need to go into this decision for this patient. We used to say it was just age. Oh, if you're young, you should have your ACL reconstructed. That's not necessarily the case. It's all about your activity level. So if Sarah is active and chooses to do higher level activities or sports that involve cutting or pivoting, or her job demands it, she may be a candidate to have an ACL reconstruction. There are people who are what we call copers, and they are not what we call ligament dependent, and they have good motor programs, and they can actually control their knee movements such that they don't get any random pivoting or shifting without their ACL. Those people are what we call copers, and they can get by in an ACL deficient mode. Then there are people who are what we call non-copers or cannot get by without an ACL, and those are the people that we recommend surgery. Long-term, the prevalence of arthritis, whether you have surgery or not, is about the same. There is an increased risk of meniscal tears in individuals who don't get their ACL reconstructed. But there's no urgency in this. In other words, Sarah could and should see a physical therapist, and she could try the conservative route and see how she does with a well-designed, thoughtful rehabilitation program that would include balance training, impact training, and see how she does. And if she can get by, great. If at some point she feels her knee is starting to pivot and she's having more incidences of instability, she could have an ACL reconstruction. And then she still has a whole nother option of graft choices. There's many decisions to be made here.
Right. And one of the factors in all of this is preserving your meniscus.
Yes.
So Jill talked about the importance of the meniscus. The meniscus is that thick piece of cartilage that rests between the shin bone and the femur, and it is a secondary stabilizer after your ACL. So if you are shifting and pivoting and sliding, you are creating wear and tear on that meniscus, and it will eventually break down. So saying, well, I can control it, but I'm shifting and sliding quite a bit, you need to be careful, because if you do tear the meniscus, then
you're losing your secondary restraint.
Right. You're going to lose your option for a decision.
Right. And, you know, historically, when people had meniscal tears, they would just remove their entire meniscus because we didn't think we needed them. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that ended up with huge defects in their knees and ended up having total knee replacements at a very early age.
Right. Yes. So save the meniscus.
Yes.
Save the meniscus. I had to have a little meniscus surgery way back.
That's right.
But they just did
a little shave and a haircut.
A shave and a haircut.
That's right.
That was it.
Yep, exactly.
And it's been fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
For the last 20 years or whatever.
But you've taken care of yourself. You eat well, you exercise regularly, you maintain a healthy body weight. Those are all factors, behavioral factors, that are in your control that will help preserve the health of that knee in the long run.
And a non-smoker.
Yep.
Well, let's take some calls. Jen in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jen.
Hi. I have a question about osteoarthritis in my hip and bone spurs. I think I could manage the arthritis for a longer time. I have been with physical therapy, and I'm still very active. But the bone spurs are what really throw me as far as mobility. And, I just... looking for any kind of assistance. You know, I'm not ready to have surgery for a new hip, but there's times where it's really difficult to walk because I can't really bend at the waist.
So are your bone spurs, are those loose bodies that are floating around in the joint? Is that what you're referring to, Jen?
I just know that when I had an x-ray done, I've only had one, he said, oh, and here you have three bone spurs. So he kind of pointed them out, and I don't know the answer to whether they're loose or stationary. I just know that there's times where they really bother me.
Yeah. So anytime you have arthritic changes in your hip, you can have what we call little osteophyte formation, or you get a little lipping around the joint. Without those little pieces breaking off. So they could be attached or floating around. And so I'm glad you had physical therapy. Does it feel when you catch these, does it make it so you really can't move your hip? Or is it, are you kind of locked in place, or is it just uncomfortable and you wiggle around and it's okay?
It feels like it's locked. And, you know, I can break it. But it's just very painful, you know?
Yeah.
So have you seen a hip surgeon, a hip specialist?
Yeah. I've only seen the specialist after I had my surgery, and he basically said, we can do surgery now if you want, or you can see physical therapy. So I went to physical therapy.
You said after your surgery?
No.
After your imaging?
After my imaging, okay. I saw the specialist.
Great.
So I haven't really talked to anybody after since then.
Okay.
All right.
So I think it's probably good to go back to that individual. Mm-hmm. There are other steps prior to surgery. You've tried physical therapy. It may be we need to modify physical therapy. You may need an ultrasound-guided injection, which would be very helpful to determine if the pain you are experiencing is truly coming from your hip, or if it's referred from your back. I'm thinking it sounds like it's her hip.
It does sound like it's your hip, but it also isn't necessarily related to specifically to those spurs. You could have a labral tear.
Right.
I don't know if it showed a labral tear on your MRI. And sometimes an intermediate surgery that's not a total hip replacement to clean out the joint and repair any labral tears could resolve some of your symptoms. So there's different options. It's not a, you know, rehab or total hip unless they're telling you have really severe osteoarthritis in that hip.
Right.
So go back.
Yeah. And
good luck.
Yeah, and maybe get a second opinion on what your other options are if this person is saying only, you know, I do total joints.
Right.
Jen, good luck. Thank you for calling. Janelle in Hilbert, we'll go to you next. Hi, Janelle.
Hi. I actually just had a doctor's appointment on Friday with my orthopedic. I am only 44, and we are talking about knee replacement.
Ooh.
I initially tore my meniscus when I was 17, sports injury, and I have had 5 knee scopes over the years.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm wondering, are there any exercise I should probably start doing now to kind of prepare for surgery?
So with these 5 surgeries, Janelle, did you always have more meniscus removed? Were those constant meniscectomies? Okay,
yes.
So you don't have...
The longest time I went between surgeries was 10 years.
Okay.
So was there any other injury besides the meniscus or...
Nope.
Wow.
Just the continuing wear and tear.
Okay.
I was told so far the meniscus and the inside of my knee are okay. Everything's on the outside of my knee where the original injury was.
So that's a really good question. So it sounds to me like you might have meniscal pathology in only the lateral compartment. So then the question becomes, would an unloader brace or a unilateral heel side to take her out of valgus and put her into a little bit of varus stress. Lori and I are talking big words. She's looking. The wheels are spinning.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about, Janelle, is if all of your meniscal pathology is on one side of your knee, could we change how you load your knee?
Right. So there are a couple options. There's some orthotics. You could try that shift the weight bearing from the outside of your knee to the inside of your knee. There's also an unloader brace that can shift the weight bearing. And then, you know, if I was to look at a knee replacement, I'd look at a unicompartmental.
For sure.
Instead of a total joint.
Correct.
That's going to buy you a little more time.
Have you tried the hyaluronic acid injection route, SynVisc, OrthoVisc, anything like that?
Yes. Before my last scope, I just had a scope three years ago. I had been doing the Synvisc injections every 6 months for 3 years prior to that scope.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it sounds like there's probably not enough meniscus left to have the
Synvisc. We're working on insurance auth right now to see if I can do the Synvisc again this time.
Okay. Yeah, the key is going to be to delay this as long as you can. How are you doing with activity, exercise?
Not as active as I'd like to be, because when I am, I'm down for the next day, or I have episodes of my knee locking.
Yeah.
That it's like, oops, I literally cannot bend my knee right now because something's like tissue stuck in the joint.
Right. So I'm not sure where you're from. I don't know where that town is, Larry.
I'm southeast of Appleton.
Oh, southeast of Appleton. Okay. Thank you. So the other thing that you could be a candidate for is a meniscal transplant. Mm, if she's got unicompartmental degenerative or unicompartmental arthritic changes, if the joint itself is okay,
right.
Then lateral meniscal transplants actually have pretty good outcomes. And so that may be worth going down that path as well, which would probably be, I don't know if anybody in Appleton does meniscal transplants or not.
It
might be going to a bigger healthcare center, either in Milwaukee or Madison or something like that, to consider having a meniscal transplant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're awfully young for that total joint.
Right.
Good luck. And thank you very much for calling, Janelle. Let's take a call from Molly in Madison next. Hi, Molly.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have an entrapped nerve in my left foot. And a few other things going on with this same foot. And then I have pain that runs up the back of the leg into the hamstring and buttock. And I think, so maybe piriformis syndrome, but I'm just wondering what strengthening exercises could be done for the piriformis that won't aggravate the foot.
Okay.
Oh, well. So, given the complexity of issues that you have going on with, you know, you started saying, you know, in the calf and up into the hamstring. So my first thought was, is this coming from your foot and going up? Is it because of how you're walking and moving? But typically those symptoms, as you suggested, come from the top down, potentially the piriformis. I'm wondering if anyone has verified that this is actually coming from your piriformis, or are you just shooting from the hip? Pardon the pun.
Pun intended.
Pun intended.
I had the most pain in my foot. We thought it was plantar fasciitis for like a year and a half, and then figured out it was actually an entrapped nerve from an MRI. And then the last month or so has been more pain in up the leg. And so I think I'm in the process of maybe trying to figure out if it's top down as well.
So have you seen somebody for that? I guess that's my question. Has anyone evaluated your hip and piriformis to see if they could find the origin of those symptoms?
Somebody suggested getting an injection
So here's what I would suggest, Molly, is you seeing a physical therapist would be a really good place for you to start. And here's why. First of all, you're having these symptoms in the back of your leg. We don't know if this is coming from how you're walking because of entrapped nerve in your foot. Maybe it's coming from your piriformis. Maybe it has to do with how you move all day long. So we don't want to just treat the piriformis because it's not going to get at the underlying cause of the problem. So if you see a physical therapist, that physical therapist can examine your hip, can examine your left leg, and see if those symptoms down the back of your leg are coming from your piriformis and give you things specifically for that. But more importantly, to assess how you walk, move from sit to stand, transition positions, to see if how you're moving is creating that problem down your leg because of your foot. This is all connected, and somebody has to unpack that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. The thing is, I have been seeing a physical therapist, but the tricky part is getting in enough, I guess.
Right.
Oh, yes, it is.
Unfortunately,
that's a case across
from many people, unfortunately. So it might be helpful to ask your physical therapist about really good things you can do at home. And also, if they give you exercises, how you could progress them on your own. If it's some time between visits, we don't want you to sit and plateau. We want you to keep moving forward. So asking them for, okay, when this exercise gets easy, what do I do next? So you could progress yourself prior to your next visit is probably a good strategy.
Yeah. And depending upon where you're going for your physical therapy, there are some systems, for example, at UW, where you could send your physical therapist a message in between your visits and say, hey, this is working or this is not working or this has gotten too easy. And they may be able to give you a couple suggestions about how to modify that in between your visits.
That's a good point as well. Molly, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. By the way, you can join in too. Have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Edward in Maquanago, we'll go to you now. Hi, Edward.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi, are you there?
Hi, sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, so I had an injury about a year ago to my left shoulder, swinging on some rings above an outdoor pool, and basically I held on when I should have let go. And since then, for about the past year, I've stopped much that I couldn't really do anything.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit.
So I tried to get an MRI, and insurance told me I needed a new PT first. So I did about 8 weeks worth of PT, and finally just got the MRI done last week, and was honestly hoping they would say something was torn. to be honest, I know, right? But I was.
No, it's a blessing and a curse. So yeah. Can you tell us what the MRI showed, Edward? You're kind of cutting in and out, so we might need to cut to the chase. Uh-oh.
I'm sorry. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, but...
cut to the chase.
Okay. So the MRI said mild fluid, bone irregularity, no full thickness, rotator cuff tear. So no tear, just indicates a supraspinatus tendon or mild strain or mild tendinosis.
So Edward, what are your current symptoms? We kind of missed that part.
Sorry, what was that?
What are your current symptoms? We missed that part earlier.
So even just lifting my arm up, like grab the steering wheel, my left arm is just super painful, and then lifting any kind of weights or picking something up, raising my arm above my head, just that motion in the rotator cuff is really painful.
Does it feel weak? Does your arm feel weak compared to the other one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, any kind of pushing that I would have to do, it's instant pain, and it doesn't feel very...
Does it feel unstable? Does your shoulder feel like the ball is going to come out of the socket?
No, not necessarily. Okay. It does pop a lot. So a couple of times I did try to bench press, not too much weight. But even when I did that, it was like a series of three or four pops on the way up and the way down.
Okay. So have you seen a physical therapist?
Yeah. And sorry if I cut out. I saw a physical therapist for about 8 weeks before the insurance allowed me to get the MRI.
Okay. What did that person think?
They thought there was a mild tear, possibly the rotator cuff or possibly the labrum, some issues with the teres minor being very hard.
Okay. Well, Jill and I are looking at each other trying to decide with furrowed brows, right. When you had that arm overhead and that traction injury, Jill was leaning towards a subluxation, like a partial dislocation. In my mind, it was a year ago. It should have been better if that was the case. And so I'm putting my I'm rolling for number 7 here, and that's a long thoracic nerve injury. So you can get a traction injury to your long thoracic nerve in that kind of position. So, and that's going to result in some very specific weakness. So depending upon whether or not your physical therapist looked beyond just your rotator cuff.
Right.
Jill's looking at me with furrowed brow again.
Well, this is just a tricky one.
Yeah.
So I with a long thoracic nerve injury or traction injury to the long thoracic nerve, that controls your serratus anterior, which controls your shoulder blade.
Right.
So a lot of people have like an obvious winging.
Winging,
but it
yeah.
could still be subtle.
Right.
And if it were like a suprascapular nerve entrapment, that would have shown up on an MRI.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I was also thinking about getting entrapped in there.
Correct.
In the on the shoulder
that
blade.
That would have shown up.
It would have showed up. You would have had atrophy.
Right.
You would have had atrophy of the
yeah.
supraspinatus. Yeah. So, yes. Well, here we are. What do we do?
We know what it's not.
Yeah. So I would. Are you still in physical therapy?
I think we lost.
Oh, okay.
We may just have to talk.
Okay. Yet. Yeah. Yeah. So another option would be to go back and have someone assess him for a potential long thoracic nerve injury. And
an EMG? You're thinking an EMG down the
road? Well, it may be an EMG down the road, but even just doing some very, very specific manual muscle testing, looking at that. Because especially the bench press, that's a serratus. That's a serratus activity. Mm-hmm. And so that could be long thoracic nerve. So that's probably where I would go next, given that everything else is negative. And if his serratus isn't working, his supraspinatus is going to have to work harder to stabilize.
For sure. Right.
So
right.
We could make that fit theoretically.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Good
okay.
luck, Edward. Thank you very much.
Let
for
us know
calling.
How you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be a good update.
Yeah.
It'd be a good update one. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today, as we look at all kinds of physical therapy issues with them. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Looking at physical therapy today with our guest, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Dave from Chippewa Valley wonders, he's looking for exercises or treatments to deal with neck pain. He drives a dump truck, so his job requires a lot of bouncing and jolting of the neck.
Yeah, so those bouncy trucks where there's a lot of vibration can become very hazardous. So Dave would benefit from a stabilization type of program for his cervical spine. There are some deep cervical flexors, which would be good to fire to kind of support his head. It would probably warrant a one-time visit to a physical therapist to make sure that he was using those muscles appropriately. And then the other thing I think we'd want to think about is within the confines of his seating system to make sure that his seat and rearview mirror and everything is set up appropriately.
Oh, yeah. I always like the advice that you give, which is to get in your car, sit up with really good posture, and adjust your mirrors so that if you look in your mirrors and you can't see very well, you know you're no longer in good posture. So I think that's great advice. Yeah, so a one-time visit can give Dave some exercises to do. A very simple one that we talked about last week when we discussed that case study of the patient with neck pain is just putting your fist underneath your chin and just pushing your chin down into your fist, working those deep flexor muscles. It's something you can do when you're sitting around anywhere, or if you're sitting in class, you can put your elbow on your desk and rest your chin on your fist, and you can actually push down into your fist to strengthen some of your deep neck flexors.
So those students in my class before this weren't really bored. They were all just strengthening their neck.
You know, whatever fantasy
you
want to believe.
The other thing that Dave can do, and this gets to the whole posture, is depending on how his seat system is, sometimes a lumbar roll, if he's really curved in his low back, his neck will come forward or his head will come forward. If he uses a lumbar roll, that will also help him sit up tall. So even though we're talking about neck pain, using a lumbar roll behind your low back could be helpful.
Right, right. And, you know, having your arms forward, mm-hmm. not unlike someone at a computer and a keyboard, tends to pull you forward. So whenever he has the chance, you know, straighten up and pull your shoulders back, even as your arms reach forward. Because as your shoulders curl around to the front, it puts tremendous stress on everything in back. What we see is everything in front gets really tight, the things in back get weak, and it just creates this circular problem that's hard to get out of.
Well, let's take another call. Carrie in Richmond, your turn. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm very active, and I just happen to notice my right foot in the back, the ankle is getting very tight. And I looked, and I can see it's maybe as round as a golf ball, but it's flat, like I have a bump. So I looked it up because I have a doctor's appointment coming up to look at it. And what I found is maybe bursitis. So I don't know, is there something that I can do before the doctor's appointment? Does ibuprofen help? Does anything help? It doesn't hurt. It's just tight, you know, for me to play my sport.
So I guess the first question is, where is the bump? Is it in the tendon behind your ankle? Is it underneath the tendon? Is it on the back of your heel on the bone?
It is on the inner part of my heel, on the side of my foot, way in the back.
So inner side of her heel.
On the
inner side of my heel.
On the inside, on the big toe side?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's way in the back.
Is it on the bone, like down low, or is it up high, sort of above the bone in that hollow space?
No, it's down low, almost to the pad of my heel.
Okay.
So if you look in your shoe, is there a wear pattern in your shoe right by that bone? Right where that bone is? And is that
no. No.
Is it red? And is your
No. Little... Huh. No, it's not red.
Does it hurt to touch?
It's almost like it doesn't hurt at all, but it's almost kinda like lighter in color than the rest of my foot. And it's a little lump, but it's the size of a golf ball. So it's that round.
Oh, the size of a golf ball's big. That's not a little lump. A golf ball's big. Have you golfed recently?
Yeah. That's one of my activities.
So is it soft? Does it move?
No, it does not move.
Okay. So it could be some bony overgrowth. You know, if it's that low, almost on the pad, you know, depending upon where it is relative to the Achilles attachment, it's unlikely that it's a bursitis, especially if it doesn't move. A bursitis, you should be able
boggy, thick.
You should be able to move it around. If it's hard, like a marble, it could be a bony overgrowth.
Yeah, like a calcaneal exostosis, kind of wear and tear. But then if Carrie's had it for a long time, typically you see that spin wear pattern on the inside of the back of your shoe where there's a little hole.
Well, and then the question is why one side and
Correct.
Not the other?
That was my next thought. And why now?
And why now?
So
go ahead.
So what kind of sports or activities are you? You said you were very active, Carrie. What do you do?
Yeah. So pickleball every day.
Oh, pickleball.
Mm-hmm. And golf.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a lot of lateral movement, mm-hmm. things like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So to answer your question, before you go see the doctor, it doesn't hurt. I wouldn't take ibuprofen. I don't know that Mm-mm. that's going to matter. It doesn't hurt. You could try icing it. Did this just show up?
Yeah, I'd say in the last 2 months. I just noticed, why is my foot always tight when I try to walk?
Okay. Oh, it could. Oh, I'm starting to think a ganglion.
It could be a ganglion. It'd be a weird spot for a ganglion.
It would be a weird spot for a ganglion.
But as much pickleball
and
golf as she's playing, that's so much lateral movement, that could very well be a ganglion. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So the answer is we don't know. So see your doctor and call us back.
But if with this tightness, if there's extra bony structure there, whatever, that could cause some of that tightness. Mm-hmm. And so still seeing your doctor, making sure it's benign, which mm-hmm. I think it is a good idea. But then seeing a physical therapist to make sure that you do good mobility stretching exercises and the right ones to keep you playing pickleball every day is really a good idea. And I'm laughing because my husband ruptured his plantar fascia playing pickleball. So I'm right there with the whole foot pain and all that. So, yeah.
Good luck. Thank you, Carrie, for calling. Penny in Sparta, your turn. Hi, Penny.
Yes, hello. I am 59 years old. I had neck surgery 10 years ago, so I had the fusion done, bone spurs ground out, discs, I guess, I'm not sure about replace. And now I've had an x-ray, and I have bone spurs above and below the cervical area. And I've been going to the chiropractor to try to keep it loose, which is helping. I'm not sure physical therapy can do anything. I wish that I could. I was curious if I could undo this neck surgery and get the pig part put in, which the FDA has now approved.
Those are lots of really good questions. So it sounds to me like you probably had a single level or multi-level fusion of your cervical spine where they fused two vertebrae together using some sort of cage. They didn't probably replace a disc or anything like that. And then what happens, Penny, is once that level is fused, the levels above and below have to work extra hard, and we know we get wear and tear at those levels. So as expected, well, not as expected, but not uncommon, we are seeing wear and tear above and below the levels of your fusion. So seeing a physical therapist could be very helpful, teaching you movement strategies, appropriate strengthening exercises, appropriate mobility exercises could be very helpful. Lori's shaking her head.
Yeah, I totally agree. So would you want to undo that fusion and redo it? No, it's not going to change the mechanics at your spine at all. So seeing a physical therapist who can examine how you move, because you are clearly overusing the levels above and below, they may be able to teach you some strategies on how to move so that those rotational movements and that loading occurs elsewhere in your spine and not at those levels above and below. So it's kind of sticking a finger in the dam to slow the progression of that deterioration, because the last thing you want is to be fusing above and below. It's just a non-starter in terms of progressive deterioration. You need to know how to move. You need to strengthen the areas to offload the static structures. So this is not unlike the lumbar spine. We see this often in lumbar spine where we try to put off a fusion as long as possible. So people sometimes say, well, what can physical therapy do? It's arthritis or it's a bony problem. So you think about it this way. You have this static structure of your spine, your discs, your static skeleton. And then you have this movement system of the muscles, tendons, and so on. The idea is to teach you how to use the muscles to support your skeleton instead of placing all those loads on the skeleton itself. So I call it sort of hanging on your skeleton. If you're not using your muscles to actively keep yourself in good posture, and I think I see everyone sitting up straight now, wherever you are, you want to use the muscles to support your skeleton. You don't want to relax and hang on your skeleton, because then you're loading these levels like Penny's talking about.
Good luck, Penny. Thank you so much for calling. John in Madison recently tore his ACL and broke his shoulder.
Wow.
And he can't afford PT. What resources are available?
Wow. He tore his anterior cruciate ligament in his knee, and he suffered a fracture around his shoulder. So he must have sustained some sort of fall or an accident or something like that. It depends on what John's age is. But with regards to... he doesn't have insurance. Is that what he said?
He says he can't afford PT.
Can't afford physical therapy. Okay. So there are strengthening exercises that would be really good for his knee. I'm trying to think if there's just a good internet source.
Are there resources available, free clinics available for people in Madison?
There is a medic clinic. Thank you for the reminder, Lori. There is a medic clinic that is run by medical students who are supervised by physicians at on Park Street.
Mm-hmm. One South Park?
No, way down by the Beltline.
Mm-hmm. I know. Do we have a South Central?
Yes. Do we have John's email? Did he email in?
He actually called but couldn't stay with us.
Okay.
So.
All right. There is a clinic. There's a couple free clinics in Madison. That's one of them. Honestly, if he called a physical therapy clinic, they may be able to tell him where the free clinics are.
Yeah.
That might be a good way to go to find all that. Because usually the receptionists have those resources.
Right.
So maybe calling a physical therapy clinic in town. I can't afford this. Where are the free services could link him up?
Right, right. That's where I would start.
Yeah.
It's a pretty complicated problem.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
There you go, John. Thanks again for that question. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We will take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we will be back with Lori and Jill. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for spending some of your time with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking physical therapy with our regular guest, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lots of callers online and lots of emails. Let's go to the phones and Holly and Ogama next. Holly, thanks for calling.
Hello.
What can we do for you? Yeah, what can we do for you?
I have a beat-up farmer husband who just had both shoulders repaired in the last few years. He's got a herniated disc in his lower back. But my question is, he needs both knees replaced. And he has horrible feet with bunions, bone spurs, and severely arthritic big toes and a Morton toe. Where do I start? Do I replace the knees first or the feet first? Which is more important to fix to get him mobile?
That's a great question. So do his bunions give him problems, Holly?
Yeah.
What kind of, like, just pain? Is it, do we need to change?
He walks like he's walking on eggshells. He does more sitting in front of the computer or in front of the TV than he does moving. And he, you know, I got to get him up and mobile, but, you know, they shoot horses if you no hoof, no horse. What's more important? Do I fix the feet first or are the knees important? Because you got to be able to walk once you get the knee replacement.
Yeah, I would say to go with the knees first.
And then look at shoe wear.
And then look at what's happening at his feet. Has he seen a physical therapist at all?
No.
Okay.
And I don't know if that would be another avenue.
Right.
I can't get him into a doctor until about December, January.
Okay.
So I'm trying to get a game plan figured out as to what's more important to fix first.
That's perfect. So I think you should see a physical therapist in the meantime for several reasons.
Right.
One is the physical therapist will look at his feet and see if there's any interventions that would help. They can make recommendations about shoe wear. They can make recommendations about arch supports. They can give him exercises. It's possible he's got some plantar fasciitis. For people who have big bunions, sometimes it has to do with the posture of their foot, which can be corrected with an orthotic. So there may be some things that a PT can do at his feet to help decrease the foot pain. That's going to be more manageable than the knee pain. Then the second thing is, if he's getting less and less mobile and you have to get a cattle prod to get him up out of his chair, then he's going to continue to get deconditioned. He's going to continue to lose motion and strength in his legs, and that's all going to set him up for challenges when he goes in to have a knee replacement. So he needs to get on some kind of structured activity program that he enjoys and that will work for him. You know, a pool would be ideal. I don't know if that's something that he would do, but given the number of things he has going
right.
on, a pool would be great for his shoulders, his back, his knees, and his feet. So getting in to see somebody and getting going and getting him in shape for a potential surgery is really the best thing you could do for him right now.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Holly. Angela in Rome, Wisconsin. Hi, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to take my speakerphone off and I'm going to pull over. There we go. Yeah, thank you so much. I'm a fan of all three of you, by the way, and I think dietitians and PT people could make all Americans healthy if we encouraged more use of them.
So let me just respond to that my sister and I are speaking at the Wisconsin Physical Therapy Association at the beginning of the month on nutrition.
Yep.
And when I look Ooh. At when I look at the research on musculoskeletal problems, really at the end of the day, it comes down to exercise and nutrition.
Yep.
So you're absolutely right.
Super. Maybe I'll have to take that in. But my problem started when I was a child. If I squat too low, my left knee pops out of joint, and it won't bend itself. I kind of have to pop it back. When I was 19, because I did sports, they did like an investigative sort of arthroscopy, and they determined that they thought maybe my tendons were too tight on my left knee, and they shaved them a little, they said, and it never did anything beneficial. I retired early, but now because I got fat during pandemic, I took a retirement job that's physical, and, mm-hmm. and there is some squatting involved, and it's gotten much worse now. And what I find is if I sit too long, it sometimes will pop out of joints. And I'm wondering if this is I've had an MRI on it. They said everything was fine. I went to one physical therapist who couldn't recreate it going into like that lock. And I'm just wondering if PT would help or if it could be a genetic issue or a structural issue. They've not identified. Do you have any idea?
All of the above. So okay. this is great. So the sliding in and out of place, I wonder if you have a little bit of underlying hypermobility, which would be kind of. Yeah, that would talk
all of
about
my joints.
Right, exactly. So kind of when you said that, that's what Lori and I are, both of our antenna went up with. You probably have some underlying hypermobility. So a physical therapist would be able to recognize the kind of comorbidities you have or the systemic issues, hypermobility being one of them. And then look at what you have to do for this retirement job. And I didn't think retirement and job went together. So I'm not liking that at all. Your retirement job, and then identifying what you need to do. And based on your soft tissue, et cetera, design a mobility and strengthening program that would best suit you. Lori and I both think you probably have some underlying hypermobility and then some patellofemoral pain with that.
Right, right. It sounds like your surgery, they did a lateral release, which is pretty common for people who have patellar problems, and patellar instability is not an unusual problem. Unfortunately, for most people, those surgeries, we've learned, don't work.
Right. They've kind of fallen out of favor.
Right. They've fallen out of favor. So getting in and figuring out how you move, and we often see people who have weakness around their hips
right.
that contributes to these kinds of knee problems. So seeing a good orthopedic or sports physical therapist who can sort through these problems would help.
All right. Good luck, Angela. Thank you again for calling. And Paula in Spring Green, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I hope you can hear me okay. Had some phone problems. I don't know if I can get it off speaker. Are you able to hear
yeah.
me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Excellent. So my husband had knee surgery June 6th, and on July 15th, he fell and he re-injured the surgical knee. After that incident, she developed something called complex
regional Krabs syndrome. Yes.
Yep. Krabs.
Yep.
In his surgical leg.
Yep.
In that foot, same foot. That the knee is perfect. He's having trouble being mobile because he says his foot has either no feeling mm-hmm. or that bees are stinging his mm-hmm. foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have suggestions of what he can do for this?
Oh, yes. So complex regional pain syndrome, or CPRS, or what Lori refers to as CRAPS, mm-hmm. because it is an awful condition, can manifest after a surgery, or in this case, it sounds like a surgery and a fall, so some sort of insult. And what happens is the messages going to your brain kind of from an extremity get miswired, and everything is interpreted as pain. And so people have hypersensitivity to touch. Some people will complain that the sheet, the bed sheet on their foot is incredibly painful. Some people will have burning. The bee sting is a good analogy. So he needs to see a physical therapist. Physical therapists can treat individuals with complex regional pain syndrome, teach the patient desensitization exercises. So the brain learns that all the messages coming from my foot to my brain are not pain, that this is light touch. This is pressure, et cetera. And many times, Lori, I think you see these patients in the pool.
I do. And the other folks on land will often do mirror therapy.
Yes.
Where, anyway, it's a little more complicated, but mirror therapy is often used to treat individuals with these kinds of symptoms. So I would absolutely get into a physical therapy clinic that can offer you those kinds of services and help this resolve. If CRPS goes untreated, you can end up having all kinds of secondary problems. You can develop osteoporosis in that limb from disuse, and then just the inactivity due to the symptoms he has creates another whole level of problems for the individual. So
for people who have been in the medical profession a long time, complex regional mm-hmm. pain syndrome used to be called reflex sympathetic dystrophy. So that's the CRPS is the new term for RSD.
Paula, good luck. Thank you again for calling. Let's turn to Bob in Claybanks. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry and ladies. Thanks for putting on the show today.
Sure.
I had a bicycle accident in May, shoulder surgery for a complete rotator cuff replacement. I cut it all the way through. And I've been having trouble with my the hand on that side, that was on my right side, swelling up usually a couple times a day. And it's been kind of a mystery to my surgeon and PT and chiropractor. So I was wondering what you ladies might, if you've ever heard of anything like that and what thoughts you might have.
So have you had your wrist examined and evaluated, imaging and so on?
No, I haven't.
Did you injure it in the fall? I mean, do you think this is just... No,
it was fine. I have another question for you a little bit later that might relate to that. But no, my hand, when I was in the immobilizer, I don't remember it being swollen, but after I got out of that, it's become an issue.
So are you thinking lymphedema, Lori? Is that what you're thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. So there are physical therapists who specialize in lymphedema management and manual therapy for lymphedema and different compression garments. And so I heard you say that you were seeing mm-hmm. a physical therapist, and I'm wondering if there's someone in the area or in their practice that specializes in lymphedema. And I think having a consult mm-hmm. with that person would probably be a really good idea.
Right. So it may be that the immobilization and the position that you were in impacted the lymph system and the vascular system there. The lymph system helps carry some of the fluid and waste products away, and you may be having some impingement
or clogged gutter.
A clogged gutter there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So someone who manages, who works in lymphedema management might be helpful as a next step.
Bob, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And let's turn to Glenn in Milwaukee next. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. My question has to do with neuropathy in the feet. It was induced by chemo drugs. and it seems like it's starting to get worse, and it feels like have a sock that's really tight around the foot.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be done about that?
Boy, unfortunately, there's not a lot from a physical therapy perspective. So what we typically do is work with your oncology team, and we get you on an active exercise program. The problem being that the symptoms you have in your feet keep you from being active. And we know that if you are active, you get better perfusion in the area, and that's going to help maintain the health of those connective tissues, your bones, your muscles, your tendons, going to maintain your overall health and can control your symptoms. But most of the time, peripheral neuropathy is managed with medication. Something in the gabapentin, Neurontin family tends to be what's most helpful for the people I see. So physical therapy helps in that we're working on your general health and preventing additional problems at your feet, but it's probably not going to resolve your neuropathy symptoms.
Will walking or running hurt it any or make it any worse?
I doubt it.
No.
Certainly not walking.
Right. I mean, the biggest thing would just be careful with a trip and
a fall.
So
yeah.
That would be the concern if you have impaired sensation there. So,
right. You
know, I might start with biking or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Which are
or I think walking would be totally fine.
Right. A rowing machine.
Yep.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Glenn, for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry in Prairie du Chien emailed. He's 79, but he's going out to Colorado for skiing. He's been skiing since he was 10. And he wonders about, you know, Prairie du Chien, he's at 630 feet altitude, and out in Colorado, he'll be from 8,000 to 11,000 feet, and wants to know how he can kind of get his lungs in shape for that.
Right. So there are more and more places that have altitude chambers where you can train. And there's a few in Madison, and I don't have hold stock or anything in this one, but there's a place called Endurance House, and it's like the word indoor and then ANCE.com. And it's on the Beltline, and they have an altitude chamber which has bikes, treadmills, things like that in it. You can bring your own bike and actually put it on a trainer they have there, and you can train at altitude there. I think they can go up to 18,000 feet. So you could look at doing something like that a few times to train prior to going out to Colorado.
So short of that, working into a cardio program that includes some high speed, that includes interval training, so high intensity stuff to really work your lungs and increase your perfusion and get used to challenging your breathing, which is generally what's going to happen at altitude. You're going to have difficulty breathing. So getting into some high-speed activities, high-intensity activities that really challenge your breathing, your secondary respiratory muscles, in addition to your diaphragm, would also be useful.
Margaret in Chippewa County has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I have a weird thing. When I was a toddler, I was given an injection in my but for probably an ear infection. And I had been walking before that time, and then I stopped walking, and they had me in traction for 10 days, and walking came back and everything. But since that time, I've had decreased mobility in that hip, and just wondering what it could be or if they have any. I haven't seen anybody about it. But, like, I can't lift my foot up. Like one step is okay, but much further than that, and that left hip won't go up. I can't bend over to tie my left shoe. I can tie my right shoe bending over, but I can't bend over to get the left.
So she has some sort of posterior hip something or
I wonder if they hit a nerve.
Yeah.
And that has caused some neuropathy or some nerve damage.
Impairment.
What did they inject?
Yeah.
Do you know what they injected?
It was probably like penicillin.
Okay.
You know, it was like in 1959.
Wow. I'm gonna have to go research this to see what would happen if you injected an antibiotic directly into a nerve. I mean, I wonder if they hit something around her sciatic nerve. or something in that area that has affected the function of those muscles. It's really hard to tell over the telephone.
Correct.
Whether
and this is not a typical what we would. This I've never heard
I've
of this.
I've not heard of this. This is a new one. So thank you. So you know, the first question we ask if you were in to see one of us is, why can't you move your hip? Can I move your hip? Like if I took a hold of your leg, can I move your hip through a full range? So is it the hip joint? No, it can't.
So I wonder if it's almost...
You cannot.
I wonder if it's from lack of mobility, if she's starting to get significant wear and tear.
So it's a mobility issue.
Margaret, how old are you?
I'm 65, and I first noticed the lack of mobility in that hip when I was like in third or fourth grade.
Yeah.
And we had to get ready for a disaster drill, and we were supposed to hug our knees and put our head down.
Right,
yeah.
And that the right knee I can hug perfectly, the left knee not at all. I have to lay it flat so that the
Oh wow, what a fascinating case.
Yeah.
So I would go see a physical therapist, have them do an exam, and let us know what they find.
See with whatever impairments you have, they can probably find some things. But I do have to say, when she started with, I have a weird story.
Yeah.
So many people do, and I'm usually like, oh, we've probably heard this before.
Have not heard this one
no,
before.
No, have not so heard this one.
Yeah, going to take this one to the bank.
Stumps the teachers.
Yeah, exactly. So, let us know what they find. This is really interesting.
Get to your physical therapist.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Margaret, thank you. Pat emailed. She's wondering what you think about super cushioned shoes such as Hoka or Superfly. Are there downsides? She suffers from lower back pain, and she finds that she gets some comfort from those.
So I think a lot of people who have low back pain and need to absorb shock somewhere benefit from shoes that have good shock absorption. I don't necessarily support any particular brand, but gosh, if it feels comfortable for you and you walk out of the store and they feel comfortable and you don't feel like you have to, quote, break them in, as a general rule, that's a pretty good thing. I do know a lot of people who do wear Hokas and really like them. I personally don't have them. My husband, who's on his feet all day, just recently purchased a pair of Hokas and is really enjoying them.
Yeah, so the key is wear something that feels like, not just that, it's really comfy, like I'm walking around in my bed slippers comfy, but if you're having symptoms somewhere, you want shoes that relieve your symptoms. So, you know, I would love to fall on the sword of foot biomechanics and say, mechanically this, that, and the other thing. But I've been a physical therapist long enough to know that that doesn't always work that way.
Right.
So I have patients who swear by Crocs.
Yes.
Who, you know, when you look at their foot mechanics, it should not work, but it does.
Right.
And so I have to say, you know, if it feels good and it's relieving your symptoms, that's the right shoe for you.
Mm-hmm. And here's a feel good. Tom in Marquette, Michigan emailed us with a compliment for you, too. He says your program is one of the best sources of helpful health guidance. Thanks for appearing each month.
Nice. Thanks,
thanks,
Tom.
Thanks for listening. That's nice to say.
And on that note, we're out of time. Lori, Jill, thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry.
Awesome.
Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW. Lori Tyne-Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. They'll be back in a month and we'll do it again. Coming up tomorrow, we learn about the life of one of America's most progressive police officers and then talk with some current police chiefs about recruiting and training efforts. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.